This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Now, Rish, we're talking about something today that sadly is pretty common in our society. Report after report has come out lately showing that many of us have been bullied and are being bullied currently.
That's right, and being bullied within our workplace. And another report has come out from the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission found that more than half of the respondents within that report had been bullied at Ambulance Victoria.
And another confronting report has just recently been released, the Jenkins Report. More than 1,700 parliamentary staff took part in that report, and nearly 40% say that they've been bullied.
So they're really high numbers of workplace bullying. But for most of us, Jono, when we think about a bully and what a bully looks like, I think we think about the schoolyard. And it actually turns out that many of those workplace bullies actually do start out as schoolyard bullies.
And as we grow up and we start to, you know, become adults and go about our lives, we think that the bully who might have stolen our lunch or, you know, been abusive to us or got other kids to gang up on us, well, we think that they're not really affecting us anymore. We think as adults that those awful emotions and the self-doubt that you might have felt when you were bullied have just dissolved and we've put all that behind us.
But it turns out that those bullies do affect us, many of us, later in life, and sometimes in a negative way. Maybe it's how we second-guess ourselves or the reason as to why we may have body image issues or why you act and react in a certain way. Sometimes, not as often, but sometimes bullies can have a positive impact on us in the way that it determines the sort of career path that we choose.
And if you think about it in those terms, I mean, it goes without saying the impact of bullying is just absolutely enormous.
So if we stamp out schoolyard bullies, do we reduce bullies in the workplace? Or is it sort of once a bully, always a bully?
Were you bullied at school and how did it affect you later in life?
Maybe you've looked back and you've discovered that you were the bully in school. And what was that moment like for you as well?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
As soon as I hear the word bully, and I know it happens in workplaces a lot, as both of those reports have stated, and we really want that to end because it's just so common. But I do think schoolyard bully, Jono. You're like,
yeah.
I don't know anyone in my circle of friends that would say that they weren't bullied at school. And I just can't think of one person. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think most people will have experienced bullying at some time. But I just want to read you, this is the definition of bullying. This is from the Victorian Department of Education. Bullying is an ongoing and deliberate misuse of power in relationships through repeated verbal, physical and or social behaviour that intends to cause physical, social and or psychological harm. And it says the three main features of bullying are the misuse of power in a relationship, it's ongoing and repeated, and it involves behaviours that can cause harm. So I reckon most people will have felt that they have been bullied at one stage or another in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the impacts are huge. We'd also be fascinated to hear from you if, as an adult, you look back and you reflected on your life and your time within the schoolyard and you realised that maybe you were the bully as well. And, you know, how did you look back on that time and how did that make you feel? Jess Sanders is a social worker. She's the author of Love Your Body, Me Time and Be Your Own Man. Jess, at the beginning of the program, we often say, we said that sometimes bullying can lead you into the sort of work that you do, and this has happened to you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's funny to think that I probably wouldn't be here doing the work I'm doing without having experienced bullying as a young person. So I'm a social worker and I write books for young people that support them to sort of feel free to be themselves and embody compassion and kindness as well.
Do you feel comfortable talking about that bullying that happened to you when you were younger?
Yeah, absolutely. So I sort of first experienced, I would say, little bits of bullying like you were talking about before. You know, we've all experienced a bit of bullying in primary school. But it wasn't until I went to high school and I was in year 7 that I transitioned from a country primary school quite small government-owned school into this sort of private suburban school, and that transition was really difficult because I felt very on the outside, I guess. I didn't quite have the clothes everyone had, or I couldn't quite know how to act in the ways that these kids are kind of adopted. And when you're at that age particularly, you know, going through puberty, big changes, and you're going into high school, it's all about belonging, and very much, particularly in Australia, I feel about being the same, you know, all of us being the same. And yeah, so basically I didn't have any friends, and in an attempt to make friends, I was like sort of socially ostracized and isolated. So I had kids, like young people, this is all girls actually, so I was trying to make friends with girls, running away from me. I remember like calling her parents, crying in the bathroom at one point. And yeah, it just evoked a real sense of fear and a long-lasting trauma actually that I'm only kind of coming to terms with as, you know, an adult in my late 20s.
Gosh, it's incredible, isn't it, when you think back at that time and you just use the word fear there, Jess, and given that most of us have been bullied, I just remember that fear of, I don't want to go to school today. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, actually now my body is reacting physically to remembering what that is like. Mm. And I don't know about you guys, but I never told my parents. I never told them that I was having a really rough time at school and that there was a bunch of girls that I was just flat out scared of. Did you talk to anyone about this, Jess?
Yeah, I did actually talk to my parents. I did feel really comfortable to bring it up with them, and it was actually a really hard time for them as well. As you can imagine, as a parent, like sending a kid off every day, knowing that at lunchtime in particular, they were going to experience that fear and distress. And there's been some studies to show that often social isolation is felt in the body in the same way as physical pain is. And remembered in the body in that way. And it's that visceral fear, because we're all social beings, we want to belong, and it's actually key to our survival. So that threat system is activated when we are socially excluded. So trauma is often from ongoing instances, and so that, I guess, that repeated process of going to school and the fear, is really long-lasting.
Got a text here, Jess, that says, I was bullied, therefore I bullied, and it shames me greatly. Teaching my kids not to do it and call it out. And that is from someone who wants to remain anonymous. But how common is that story that, you know, someone who has been bullied ends up being the bully?
So, yeah, I read a study that it was approximately 50%, it was in a certain age group, but 50% of those who had been bullied went on to bully. And I think it's really quite sad that, yeah, that person texting through is experiencing that shame as well, because I think it is a really normal reaction, because often the bully, by nature of bullying, creating an environment of fear, then finds space in belonging, because other people are kind of scared to hold them accountable. And when we're othering, it means that we're a part of something, typically. And so it's like reinforces those bonds. So I think often bullying does come from this behavior of, like, we all want to belong, but sometimes young people go around it the wrong way.
What's incredible, though, is actually having the courage to realise that you did that, and then to try and stop that, like teaching their kids now not to do it and to call it out, like to actually create that change within the generation is incredible. Gail's in Bendigo. Jess, stay with us. Gail's called in. Hi, Gail. What did you want to say?
Hi, Rochelle. I taught in a large school in Bendigo for over 20 years, and every second year we would have a whole school production where be based on different themes, and the children would create the lyrics and they'd be massaged into songs. And so much of the material they wanted to sing about were about these relationships, harmful relationships where they were bullied. And the songs would resonate so much, not only with the children, but with the adults around them, with their parents when they perform them, because everyone can put themselves in that position of having those things happen to them. And it was just fascinating to watch over the years the number of children who would remain in harmful relationships with girls or boys who treated them appallingly, and yet their desire to be included and their desire to belong was greater than their self-respect. They didn't think they deserved, or it was just too hard to step away because, well, who would they be with? You know, who would they spend time with?
Who would you play with? Who would you spend time with?
Gail, you've just totally described what happened to me in year seven, basically. I turned up to go to year seven on the first day and these two kids followed me around singing Johnny Be Fat to me and just kept going with it and kept going with it. And I didn't know how to react because I hadn't been bullied like that before. So I just decided to do what you're describing and just try and ingratiate myself with them. So try and turn them into my friends. And they ended up being friends and we're still friends now, but it was just absolutely horrible.
Have you ever spoken to them about that, John? Like the fact that you're friends now shows you that you're a very persuasive man, that you convince these guys. But did you ever say, man, like
affected me. And it probably still affects me now. I don't know. You can send yourself a little bit crazy trying to think about how that now affects the way I live my life now. But I haven't spoken to them about it, but that's exactly right, Gail. That's exactly spot on. So kids who are being bullied then often will just try and go along with it because that sense of belonging, you just want to belong. You just want to be friends with someone.
Exactly. And you can coach someone and encourage them and say, you don't have to put up with this. This is children who would be excluded from a birthday party but spend every lunchtime with someone. You know, that sort of power play, particularly, I'm not going to single out a gender, but just that single-handed power play that starts in the sandpit, and we see it in our, in our employment and in our families, and sometimes we mirror what we see, don't we? And if we're sort of in a position of no power at home, then we maybe want it in the school ground.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to get it in a positive way, but these songs were a part of a catharsis for so many who felt
sort
of victimized.
Such a great idea. Gail, thank you so much. I guess the role of teachers here is huge, and we're going to speak to some principals in just a moment. We'll also speak to Kids Helpline, because whenever you look into a lot of this research, it comes back to the amazing work that Kids Helpline does with advice not just for the young person, but maybe for the carer, for the adult or the older sibling or even the teacher as well to get that advice. Jess Sanders is with you as well, social worker and author of Love Your Body, Me Time and Be Your Own Man. Jess, when we think about trying to stop a bully, it almost feels impossible, whether it's using the technique like Jono of trying to befriend them or like what Gail said, sing songs.
Which I wouldn't necessarily recommend, by the way. It doesn't always work.
No, but I think we all have these techniques. But what's interesting is Jess's books I've used with my daughter already with trying to just teach her self-love, self-respect. And I guess, Jess, a lot of it does come down to we can't really stop somebody else's actions, but we can maybe try and find a point of strength within ourselves to be able to build resilience or to not have them affect us as much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is absolutely an important part of it is teaching that ability to self-regulate and speak to yourself kindly and not take on the voice of the bully and actually internalize it and continue to talk to yourself in that way. And we also, I've got messages, particularly in Be Your Own Man, about finding friends that make you feel comfortable and safe to be your whole self. I think that's so important, but we also need to be holding young people accountable that are perpetrating the bullying and teach them about empathy and kindness as well. So I think we often put it on potentially victims to address the behaviour of, say, a perpetrator like a bully. But, we as the adults, the teachers in the space, the parents need to be teaching every young person about empathy, compassion, kindness and diversity and inclusion. So much bullying is about othering based on difference and things like, fat being in a bigger body being used as a weapon, could be the colour of your skin, it could be your gender identity, sexual orientation, even just like, how your voice sounds. There's so many ways that people are used to other, and if we can teach young people about diversity and the fact that there is no such thing as normal, and that everything is wonderful and okay and that we accept all people and that diversity is actually a great thing and a strength, I think we'll see a huge shift in that bullying culture that we have in Australia that's so strong.
Jess, it is just so common as well. There's lots of texts on this. This one says, my son was bullied at primary school. The bully was confronted and admitted his behaviour, but the school just told the boys to keep to opposite sides of the playground. It was totally inadequate. This texter says, and the school system is failing so many. Teachers need guidelines and workshops to understand how to deal with it. They're totally unskilled in this. And it's not just schoolyards, it's workplaces as well, because this one says, I left hospitality because of kitchen bullying. So many jobs in the past I've had to leave because of anxiety and gaslighting. Now doing a mundane job because I've had my confidence destroyed. And it's just so sad to read texts like that. Julie is in Frankston. Good morning, Julie. What do you want to say?
Oh, good morning. I'm an ex-chalky, and I just want to, before I say anything, to say that I bullying does exist, and it's dreadful. But I'm just thinking about the younger children in primary schools and the fact that their social skills are not very well developed, and there's always bound to be a level of conflict between children. And it's interesting, the number of parents who would barrel up to a school and say that my child is being bullied when there is some conflict between children, and that's true.
How do you determine, Julie, what is natural and healthy conflict, you know, if there is even a term, and what is destructive and what is bullying, and where does that line cross?
Well, I think the description, the definition that was given before about the ongoing nature and the power issues, the department's definition you gave before is excellent. And I think that there is conflict between children. I think it's in the role of the adults, and this is parents and teachers, to talk to the children. And some of the things that Jess said about developing empathy and awareness of others and building resilience in children is really important, but not to jump necessarily to
think parents are being being too precious. It's interesting though, Julie, because there's a text here. Lots of kids, you know, us included in this conversation, hide it from our parents. This says Rish and Jono, my early high school years were awful because of bullying. I'd get my school bag whacked into my back on a daily basis. I was verbally and physically attacked. My father was battling cancer at the time, so I didn't want to burden my parents. It culminated in me having a tooth broken and coming home with bruises and scratches to my face. That's when my mum took action. When people told me your high school days are the best days of your life, I used to think, God help me. It was a living hell. This experience, though, has made me very empathetic, and I will never quietly just watch injustice. I am more assertive as a result, but I still have that inner security. That's from Helen in Mornington. Helen, I'm so sorry that happened to you, but it just shows so much, doesn't it?
There's some really powerful stories, and just shows that it is so, so common. But the common threads on that, Jess Sanders, is that sometimes it takes physical bullying for a parent or someone to sit up and take notice, when really the psychological bullying might have been going on for months. But as soon as someone, you know, breaks an arm or gets injured, then we seem to take notice. Do we need to change that, Jess?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a nation, we're really comfortable with the physical line, and if someone were to step over the physical line, we'd be like, yep, that is violence, and, you know, our legal system reflects that. But emotional abuse, and I've worked in family violence in the past, and emotional abuse in a family violence context has much more damaging and long-lasting consequences than physical violence does. And it can be torment, and it can be ongoing, and what can be so hard is that you can't show or prove to someone else what is happening to you is real, and we all need our realities confirmed and validated, you know, to be able to experience the feelings that we have as a result. So I think we do need to get better at understanding what emotional and psychological abuse looks like, and appreciate that the effects can be, negative.
And we also need those resources. And I can say hand on heart that your book has helped me. So it's awful that you had to go through what you went through as a young woman, Jess. But the fact now that it's turned into your life work and that you're helping others is huge. So thanks for your time and for your work.
Oh, thank you so much, Rochelle. It was a pleasure.
It's Jess Sanders, social worker, author of Love Your Body, Me Time and Be Your Own Man. Many texts saying so much of this comes from the parents as well, in terms of excluding from the party or the types of parents that they have in their behaviour. And you wonder sort of how far down this rolls, whether, you know, they were bullies at school, and whether you kids learn from examples as well.
Yeah. I don't know whether I'm just feeling overwhelmed by this or not, or whether this is just the realistic view, but I don't know if we can ever wipe out bullying.
No,
it seems to be it's just part of our society, and it probably has been forever. And there's a text here saying, I'm over 70 and I don't know anyone in all the people who I went to school with. It was a girls' school. at the very same time as me, who claims to have been bullied. Whereas, I don't know, as we were saying before, Rish, I reckon most people you speak to who might be a little bit younger than that would say, yes, yeah. I have been bullied.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and yeah. I agree, John. I don't think we can stamp it out. We can get better strategies around dealing with it. We can build better ways to be able to cope with it and how to recognise it as parents or as ourselves as well. Yeah. But Tony Fitzgerald may be able to answer this. He's the virtual services manager at Your Town, which is Kids Helpline. Tony, all of the resources come back to the incredible work that you do at Kids Helpline when it comes to bullying. I mean, over the years, has it gotten worse?
Oh, good morning. Good morning, guys, and thanks for having me this morning, firstly. Look, it's interesting. When we look at the data for Kids Helpline, the number of contacts we get every year remain relatively stable. There are some fluctuations in, whether some of that bullying's online or whether it's face to face. But typically, you know, we would get about 3,000 contacts every year from young people who might identify as their main reason for contacting us is that they're being bullied and they need some support around it. So, it's getting worse per se, but I think the impacts that it's having on young people, particularly when we look at the area of cyberbullying, the pervasiveness of that, and the fact that that's 24/7, 7 days a week, you know, I think, you know, there's certainly an issue there that is potentially exacerbating it for our young people.
Mm. Did the pandemic affect the number of people who were contacting you?
It's actually really interesting, the data for Kids Helpline. Overall, yes, of course, we had a very significant increase in contacts, and particularly from young people concerned about their own mental health and emotional well-being, you know, being in lockdown and just the general anxiety that the pandemic has caused all of us. What we did see, particularly this year, over the last 12 months, is an increase in young people concerned about cyberbullying, and a bit of a decrease, I think, in the general bullying. And that kind of makes sense when you think about what's happened with kids being in lockdown, not being in the school environment. Normal trends that we see outside of COVID during school holidays is that the demand does reduce a little bit, and we don't get those kind of contacts because kids are at home and away from that school environment where a lot of bullying does take place. But kids in lockdown and not having necessarily access to those traditional kind of supports that they would if they're at school, and the fact that a lot of activity and behaviour went online certainly showed in some of our data where bullying online and online concerns increased, particularly over the last 12 months.
I don't know whether you have data or research on this, Tony. Tony Fitzgerald from Kids Helpline is with you. Whether online bullies are the physical schoolyard bullies as well, or are they sort of two separate, maybe they're nice and they're friendly on the playground, but then sort of become, you know, what was called keyboard warriors, or whether the schoolyard bullies then continue to bully into the evening and in the social online space as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. What we do tend to see is that the online bullying tends to be an extension of what's happened face to face in the schoolyard.
You know, because it makes it relentless, doesn't it?
It does. And that's before Facebook, before social media, at least young people had the ability to escape it when they went home. But now, because of the 24/7 nature of being online, that's the world for young people these days. There's no distinction between what's happening online and what's happening offline. It's all part of their experience. So it continues. And when you think of the nature of bullying, that it's very rare that would be initiated by random contact with someone that the bully doesn't already know.
So with some of the changes that we're looking at the government trying to make with outing trolls and bullies and whatnot, I mean, there were reports today in the news saying that, you know what, it might help big companies, but it's really not going to help the average person like you and I stamp out bullying in any way. I'm not sure whether you've had time to look through some of the recommendations, but do you think that any of these governmental changes to cyberbullying are going to help just you know, average people?
I think looking at those measures in isolation, clearly not. I mean, if it's one part of the bigger picture and the bigger puzzle that we have to solve in terms of bullying, certainly we would welcome any measures and attempts to clamp down on and prevent online trolling. But this is behaviour that social media platforms and online environments allow amplification of that behaviour, but it's still going to exist. So we need to look at a range of solutions that include, better regulation and better measures to prevent online bullying and harassment. But also, you know, we kind of got to start really early as well and help children, young people, families, adults value positive relationships and respectful relationships. This is a societal problem. It doesn't stop when young people leave school. It continues in all elements and all levels of society. So the online aspect is only one part of it.
Yeah. And those laws that you're talking about, Rish, so under this new legislation, the laws would require social media companies to collect personal details of current and new users and then allow courts to access the identity of those users to launch defamation cases. But if you think about how practical that is, like how many teenagers are going to be launching defamation cases?
That's right.
I just can't see it happening. And of course, you need, a certain amount of money and
time
to do that.
Absolutely.
Marina is in Wallington. Good morning, Marina. What do you want to say?
Good morning. Look, we've been trying to legislate human behaviour for 2,000 years, and one only has to turn on the nightly news to see how well we're doing with that. I'm going to suggest that the focus need not be on the bully, but the focus needs to be on the child being bullying and to teach that child the language of emotions and what to do with those emotions. Most people, how are you today? And most people say, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm okay. But it's a much more sophisticated language than that. I feel hurt. I feel sad. I feel disappointed. I feel. And when we teach children that and what to do with their emotion, I guarantee you the bullying will stop, because it's the emotional component of what the bullying does that creates.
Will the bullying stop in society, or will it just mean that we're better at dealing with it?
I'm arguing in the whole of society. Because what you do, and this is where it gets a bit woo-woo, is you change the energy of yourself. And then you don't bring forward those experiences anymore. Now, I appreciate that's a very big concept to grasp. But
I hope we can do it, Marina. I mean, I'm hoping that that's possible. I just wonder, Tony, I mean, we can change our emotional intelligence around people being mean and nasty and just downright disgusting to us, but will that mean they'll just go on to bully someone else if they're not getting a reaction from Jono or from me? Like, will it actually stamp out bullying?
Yeah, look, I think equipping young people to better handle bullying is one part of the equation, but you're right, if the bullies will just move on to someone else. And the reality is we've got to take a two-pronged approach to this. We really need to look at what are the underlying causes of bullying and what makes people want to engage in that behaviour in the first place. And then on the other side of the equation, really equip our young people from an early age, right from an early age, to be able to identify what's going on and what to do when they feel like they're being bullied. You know, a lot of the young people at Contact Kids Helpline, they probably do know what to do in a general sense, but because they're so in such a state of distress and anxiety, their brain is not able to kind of process that in a rational way until they have the opportunity to speak to a counsellor, and we can actually, work with them on some real positive strategies that they can take. But I do have a concern that we're just focusing on the victim. We need to also focus on very much on the behaviour in the first place.
And I should give the Kids Helpline number there. The number is 1-800-551-800. That's 1-800-551-800. There's also Lifeline available if you need to talk to them, 13 11 14. But just before we let you go, Tony, what do you recommend if there is schoolyard bullying going on? I mean, what do you tell someone who's being bullied?
Well, bullying will always thrive in an environment where there's no visibility of it or there's limited visibility of it. So the first thing that we say is, you know, find a trusted adult, bring it out of the shadows, report it, get some, you know, tell someone. And that's not, it's easy for us to say that. It's very hard for sometimes for a young person to get the courage to do that. So that's why, you know, potentially they contact a service like ours initially and we can talk them through that. But really trying to let a trusted adult know. And we know a lot of young people don't want to trouble mum and dad about these things. But, you know, I think we've got to equip our parents and our adults to better respond to it when a young person does disclose bullying. But we've got to bring it out into the open, bring it out into the daylight, report it, and also take where we've seen real success with bullying in school environments is where there's a whole of school approach.
Yeah.
And they really start by not kind of focusing on bullying, but focusing on the respectful relationship side of things from the outset.
You do incredible work, Tony, so thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'm wishing all your listeners a wonderful Christmas.
You too. That's Tony Fitzgerald. He's from Kids Helpline. Again, the number for Kids Helpline, 1-800-551-800. You know, when Tony was saying there, Jono, about, you know, having that strength to call it out, that's one thing I think as the next generation coming through are getting so good at. And I get really passionate and excited when I see the wave of, in particular, young women, but it has an onflow effect of calling out bad behaviour. And I feel so happy that my daughter will grow into, I think, a generation of people that stand up for themselves and for other people as well. And if we can create calling it out as a part of our normal way of being, then that's a huge leap forward as well.
Yeah, gee, I hope so. I really hope so. I just know teenagers can have that really strong drive to fit in and to belong. And sometimes there's competing demands that you don't want to, you know, stick your head up and call something out if you feel like that'll threaten your belonging. But another really interesting concept that he was talking about there was this whole of school approach. And in just a moment, we're going to find out how different schools are incorporating or trying to stop bullying across the school, you know, from parents to teachers, from staff members, from students. There are schools that are trying really hard to wipe this out. But if we stamp out bullies at school, do we reduce bullies in the workplace? Is it a case of once a bully, always a bully? What do you think? And have you looked back and maybe discovered that you were the bully?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
And report after report has come out of late stating some pretty awful facts around 50% in some workplaces of people saying they're being bullied. So today we're bringing it back to the schoolyard. Is that where it all starts? Quite a few people saying that, look, I'm 77 and I was bullied at primary school a lot. Another saying, in my experience as a bullied kid, I go to functions now, we're all in our 60s. If you think there wasn't bullying back then maybe you were the bully, says Amanda in Pakenham as well. But we're talking about whole school approaches.
Yep. And Eloise Beveridge is the principal of Trinity Lutheran College in Mildura. Good morning and welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Morning, Rochelle. Morning, Jono. How are you?
I'm okay. How do you deal with bullying at your school?
Yeah, certainly. Look, I think as you've pointed out, it has to be a whole of school approach. It's got to be a conversation. It's got to be something that's spoken about. You know, we speak up, we call out, that we encourage our students right from day one about what bullying is, what it looks like, and also how we can approach and what we do if we feel that we're in that position and if we're being exposed or made to feel uncomfortable in any way.
There's so many texts and calls here, and I think even ourselves included, that say they hid it from their parents. We know how much pressure is already on schools and teachers at the moment, but unfortunately it's going to be the principals and the teachers that see this, and the parents might have no idea what's going on.
Absolutely. That's so often the case. And so for us at our school, and I know in majority of schools, you know, the biggest thing is encouraging students or parents to speak up when they do become aware, because often it's underhanded or it's sneaky or in days now of technology where our students have got devices 24/7, you know, we went home and unless someone rang the family home line when I was a child, bullying stopped out of hours, whereas now it ramps up after hours potentially for students. So we've got to know about it to be able to deal with it and manage it. But I think more importantly, it comes back to the education and the awareness of what it is and how we can manage it, but also the skill set on how we behave and how we interact with one another so it doesn't happen in the first place.
We're just hearing from Kids Helpline about how cyberbullying ramped up a bit during the pandemic because kids were learning from home and they had more time on devices and more time communicating with each other. Did you experience or see any of that?
Look, to be honest, we were very fortunate here at, during the COVID and remote learning times. We didn't see an increase. However, it unfortunately is often the most common form of bullying amongst students today because it is, you know, we talked before about parents often not being aware. It is a way and a method of communicating with one another through various apps for our young people where it's very difficult for other people to trace or to follow up, and it's not until someone speaks up and speaks out that we can manage it and intervene in order to put processes in place to support the victim. And also the perpetrator, the person that is the bully, it's really important that they understand the behaviour and understand the consequences and the impact of other people, and that we offer an opportunity to upskill and change their behaviour as well so that we can put a stop to it.
How easy is that, Eloise? Anecdotally, I spoke off air with a principal that has been in the game for a very long time, decade on decade, and she was saying that parents are now bullying teachers and bullying principals, and when maybe you might say, oh, you know, look, Jono's been really bad in the schoolyard, he's been bullying this person, blah, 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 he's been doing this, the parent will say, no, he's not, no, he hasn't, no, he's fine, it's absolutely, has not. Like, how, it's not always as easy as just alerting the parents to bad behaviour of that child and then coming up with a resolution, is it?
No, absolutely not. I wish it was because that often is that greatest challenge. And, you know, I think as parents, and look, I've got a 9-year-old daughter, and, you know, we all love our kids, and our job as mum and dad is to be there and be their number one protector. So it's sometimes hard to hear something that may not be what you want to hear about your child. And so I think for us as schools, the way we communicate with our families has a huge impact in that long term, but the sooner we involve our families, the better as well. So yeah, that it's not coming out of the blue. It's not something that's been growing, you know, for 6 months, 2 years, but we involve our parents really early on. Still, there are often those parents who are not my child, and no matter what their children say, they back them to the hilt, and that is a challenge at times.
Yeah, I can imagine. Look, thank you so much for speaking to us, because I called a number of schools to take part in the conversation hour today. And
Not everyone wants to do it.
Not everyone wanted to do it. So I'm glad, and kudos for you for agreeing and being so open and honest about how you deal with bullying at your school. Thank you.
Look, it's my pleasure. I just think as a society, we all have a responsibility to call out behaviour, and we're naive to think that bullying doesn't exist. So we're all out there, all promoting a positive message and all working together. I think that's how we get change. So yeah, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Eloise Beveridge, Principal of Trinity Lutheran College in Mildura. And yeah, just it's a testament to how common this is, Rich. There are just so many texts. Helen from Mornington makes a good point. She says, the music, art rooms and libraries are sanctuaries for the bullied at high school. I remember that.
I've forgotten about that. You just keep painting. No, look, I've got to just... And you'd lock yourself in the art room in the studio, or you'd find a space and pretend you were studying near a teacher so that you felt... Yep. Protected.
Yeah, the libraries especially, you know, head to the library at lunchtime because you just don't want to be outside. We should give those numbers again too, because there are so many people with personal experience on the text line of bullying. So Lifeline is 13 11 14, Kids Helpline 1800 551 0800. And I'm really interested to find out about whether if you're bullied as a teen or as a young person, what impact that has on your life later on.
Yeah, well, there's a text here from Anonymous saying, guys, I'm a 53-year-old male from a privileged background. I went to an elite private school in Melbourne. I was systemically bullied at school. I still remember the name of the perpetrator. It definitely shaped my life in a negative way. It never leaves you. Well, Michael Burge, he's an OAM, he's the director of the Australian College of Trauma Treatment and former president of the Australian Psychological Society. That text kind of sums it up a lot, Michael, doesn't it? It can shape your life and it can never leave you. But how often is it that we don't realise that it is that schoolyard bully that is having an impact on us?
Oh, that's so true, Rochelle. And that was just, there was great points in the previous discussion there. Look, it's just, I think in us in the psychology area, it's one of the most prominent areas that we work in. We try and help people with people that have been bullied at school. I think it's around about 35%, the research shows. What tends then to happen on a sort of a lifelong basis is those that have been bullied at school, subject to bullying of all kinds, there's various varieties of bullying, unfortunately tend to internalise the bullying and then become victims later in life, not just in the workplace, but also are subject to domestic violence scenarios as well and bad friendships. So it's a real challenge for society, you know, 35%. And by the way, the research also shows it's not improving when it comes to workforce matters. 10 years ago, it was around about 70%, the Forbes research shows, and lately it's been reported to be around about 90%. So there's been an increase of 20% in the last 10 years. A worry.
That is a worry, but it is just so interesting that point you made before that a lot of the time the schoolyard bullies do go on and continue to be bullies throughout their life, because I actually expected the opposite. I thought it was a short-lived thing whereby, you know, the bully might be feeling really insecure themselves, so that then might lash out and do the bullying and then would somehow gain some security in themselves and their own character and personality later on and would stop the bullying. But
you're
the
such
research...
a glass half full bloke, Jono.
At the moment I am, not always. But the research doesn't really bear that out, does it?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a sort of a strange phenomenon that once bullies are bullies, they tend to sort of carry that forward into our life in various ways. The research shows that those that are bullies, serious bullies, serious assault, etc., there's a 60% likelihood they'll turn out to be criminals, unfortunately. But a lot of bullies, while they're very, they can be described as the mean girl, the mean boy, the name caller, the hitter and so forth, those that get others to sort of get together in a pack and back up on one poor person that's vulnerable, they also tend to move from that behaviour once they get into the workplace later in life into more relational type bullying, more covert rather than overt bullying. And, they can act out that way in all sorts of ways. And they can be quite prominent in corporations too, by the way, called corporate bullies.
Yeah, just the thing. Michael, lots of people have rung in, and I do feel like we're getting better at emotional intelligence. You know, schools, as we just heard from Eloise, have got great programs in place. We're seeing a huge rise of young people calling out horrific behaviour. Are you seeing a shift and a change within our communities as to how we approach these types of things that we come across?
Oh, across the board, yes. The social awareness has risen quite dramatically and appropriately, and there's so many good support mechanisms around. But the thing that all those support mechanisms, government bodies, etc., WorkSafe, etc., other groups, need to take into account that a lot of the bullies are quite diabolical, and they tend to actually adjust to the sort of circumstances that are putting restraints upon them. They become, if you like, more diabolical, more cunning, and they often play the game of being bullied when they are actually bullies. They set things up so that they can use the legislation to then still act out that behaviour. The ones that are sort of more in the diabolical category. But it's true. I mean, there's colliding things happening. While that's happening, overall, we are getting much better in setting up support mechanisms.
So that's great that we are getting better at setting up support and we are becoming, you know, generally more emotionally intelligent. But yes. You also said at the start of this conversation that the problem is getting worse, that you know, that more people are reporting bullying. Or is it just that more people know what bullying is and feel comfortable to report it?
Well, that's true. I think I'd like to take a positive note on that. People are becoming more aware of the fact that they are being bullied. There's a lot more help available. There's a lot more knowledge within the psychological profession and the community, and they're more likely to report that. Now, once upon a time, so going back 20 years, the experience in the profession and the research would show that people who were bullied were tend to be have stoic type behaviours. They would keep things to themselves. Now they're being encouraged more to come forward and report that, to go to their manager, to go to HR, say we're talking about workplace bullying now, to turn to friends. So the awareness, I think, would show that 90% mm-hmm. would be moving in that direction. But also, I mean, it's an ongoing problem. It's a complex problem, and we need to still obviously keep on top of it.
While we have you, Michael, let's have a chat to Sharon. She's in Kyab. Sharon, welcome. What did you want to say?
Oh, hi, thanks for taking my call. I have three children, they're all young adults now, and they were all bullied to varying degrees through their schooling. And one very, really, really terribly bullied with and has had significant mental health problems pursuant to that. But the comment I really wanted to make was my observation of the different ways that schools deal with this and how important their role is. So on the one hand, my son who was bullied terribly, his school really didn't acknowledge that and weren't supportive. And on another occasion with a different school, my other son actually engaged in some bullying behaviour on one occasion, and it was immediately called out and we were called in to meet with the most senior people in the school with our son to discuss what had happened. And it was just an incredibly powerful response.
Wow. And how did your son deal with that? Was he a part of that conversation and the process of trying to find a resolution or to call out that behaviour?
Yeah, he was very much so. And I think he felt immediately quite devastated and ashamed by his behaviour. I, as his mother, sat there and cried through most of the meeting because I was so disappointed in his behaviour. But as I say, it was a single event and the really powerful response from the school, but also the school acknowledged that, you know, he was a good kid and had a lot of, you know, positive attributes, and this was a shock to them that he was behaving in this way. And I thought that was also just so powerful because it didn't demonise him, but it...
And do you know why he was acting out? Like, did you get to the bottom of it? If it sort of shocked you and it shocked the school, what was behind it?
I think it was probably because he had also experienced bullying. And I know there's been some discussion earlier about, you know, whether people who experience bullies go on to be the bully. And look, I don't think that there's a straightforward answer to that, but I would say my other son who, you know, was really had a lot of bullying and has had some significant mental health issues, is the opposite of that. You know, he's very empathetic and will call things out when he sees them. So I think, you know, these things can go different ways.
They can. Sharon.
Sharon, look, thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experience. And it just goes to show different approaches from different schools can make a pretty big difference.
And involved parents can still have kids that maybe act out in the wrong way.
That's right. And look, Michael Burge, thank you so much for your expertise and your thoughts this morning. We really appreciate that.
That's my pleasure.
Michael Burge, Director of the Australian College of Trauma and Treatment and former President of the Australian Psychological Society. Albie Fitt is principal of Kawa Primary School, and he reckons that bullying is caused by, well, not having a sense of belonging. Good morning. Is it as simple as that?
Good morning. How are you going? I've just been listening to what other people are saying too, and it's all very interesting, and it's great that people are willing to share. I was just listening to the last part of your interview then with the lady, and she was talking about how the school responded. And I just feel the school, there has to be a really great team culture. At our school, we've really worked to build a team culture. And I always think that when you really get to know people, you come to treat them in a different way. You really care about them because you know more about them. And there's a sense of trust develops. And I'm always talking about in our school, and we only have a small school. We only have 25 children in our school.
Oh,
so
wow.
We are at a bit of an advantage, I suppose, compared to a bigger school. We get to know people well. But at the same time, we have parents, kids and staff who acknowledge that we're a team. And there's trust that develops. And I think that trust is really important because when you approach a parent, when you talk about things like bullying, the parents already realise that you have their kids' best interests at heart, and you care about them because they're part of the team and because the parents are part of the team as well, that you can approach these subjects a bit more easily.
It must be confronting too as a principal or as a teacher, especially in a small school like yours where there's only 25 children, to go to the parent and say, look, you know, there's something that we need to discuss, because the chances are you know them pretty well, you know that they live in the town and the community, and you're having to raise something very sensitive.
Yeah, well, the thing that I've found here in Cowra, which is really, really nice, is the fact that, as I said, the parents really do trust you. So if I call a parent and want to discuss something with them, they're often not defensive or offensive. They're more, oh, yes, let's talk about it, because we know that if you've brought it to our attention, it's something that we need to discuss. And I found that I used to teach in Melbourne. I taught in Melbourne for quite a few years, and I've been in Gippsland now for about 10 years or so. And this understanding that we are a community, we are a team, is really special. And to be a principal in this environment, I consider myself to be very fortunate.
Yeah. Have you ever experienced bullying from parents, or have any of your staff experienced bullying from parents?
Not in the school that I'm in, but I've been principal of a number of schools, and I have experienced some bullying in the sense of people saying, I have experienced, I suppose, some bullying with people thinking that they can come in and kind of tell you what's what. I've in the past where people have said to me, you wouldn't know what a principal looked like if you saw one, you know.
horrific stories.
One person told me once, I don't know anything about children or child psychology. I need to watch A Current Affair.
No.
You know, do your research, Elwi. Do your research.
So I hadn't done the research, so those kinds of things. But at the same time, I find that, as I said at the beginning, it's our school values. We have school value of respect and self-belief, which I thought really fit with bullying, because I think that you're respecting others and believing in yourself kind of covers the whole thing, doesn't it?
It does.
I was just going to say about the bullying. Some people think that schools can just make rules and stop all these things. But think about this. Every person's an individual. Children are not all little robots that we can turn into the way we want them to be. And they come in with a background from all different backgrounds. And if you think about, if you brought a whole bunch of adults into a school every day, working together from all different backgrounds, we all bring a lot of things with us. We bring good baggage and we bring bad baggage.
Yeah.
And kids have to learn. They have to learn to understand
to get
what's
along.
Good and what's not, and to get along. That's right.
Yeah, good on you, Albie. Thank you so much for telling us about your experience and how things are going at Cowra Primary School. That's Albie Fitt, principal of Cowra Primary School, and he's very keen on this being all about belonging and working together as a team and instilling those values, Rish.
I know, and I don't know how I feel about today. It's been quite confronting, hasn't it, sharing all of those stories? But if anything has come out of it, I do feel like we are getting better at talking about it and getting better at calling it out. We've done similar programs to this, so if you've missed some of today's show, or you want to go back and listen to anything, whether it be on schools, whether on all sorts of culture, you can subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast, go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, and I'll give you those numbers again. I mean, we gave Kids Helpline, but 1-800-551-800, and Lifeline is there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That number is 13 11 14. If, by the way, you do have a great idea for a Conversation Hour, we'd love to hear from you. Just email conversationhour@abc.net.au. So that's the Conversation Hour for today. Thanks for listening and have a good one.